So just a health warning, Paul. I'm feeling totally miserable today.
What, more miserable than usual?
Total misery guts. I've had this cold that isn't COVID for 11 days now, and it's really annoying. And on top of it, last night we had the mother of all storms here in Wiltshire. It absolutely lashed it down. So this is Friday morning, so that was Thursday night if you're listening on the Sunday when this comes out. But yeah, it was a terrible
Well,
storm.
that just shows you how this cold has affected you, because actually it's Thursday we're recording this, so it was Wednesday night.
Oh my God, that just shows you how I'm completely and utterly all over the place at the moment. I don't even know what day it is.
You're completely shot, mate.
Ah, oh, God knows what I'm going to do now. That's really worried me, because now I think now I thought it was Friday and it's Thursday. I'm really wondering what meetings I've missed out on
Well,
my
yes.
calendar.
Where are you supposed to be? Not here, that's
Where
for
am I
sure.
supposed to be? No. Anyway, at least I've made it to this, which
Yes.
is the most important thing of the 2 weeks, of course.
It is.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. My name is Glyn Coy, and I am the person behind the Hidden Wiltshire project. And apologies if my voice sounds a little bit strange, but as I said in the intro bit, I have the mother of all colds, man flu, or whatever they call it. And with me this week, as usual, I have my podcasting partner,
Monsieur Paul Timlett,
Monsieur.
who is sitting in the sunshine in Dordogne still, and I don't have a cold. And we also had the mother of all storms last night. Must have been the same one.
Yeah, probably was.
We had, I don't know, the rain wasn't that bad. It was pretty heavy at times, but it was the wind. And I was sort of lying in bed at God knows what time last night, thinking the roof is going to lift off any minute here.
Yeah.
It was really quite concerning. We're about 800 feet up in the hills in the north of Dordogne, the very north of Dordogne, and it's quite exposed up here.
Yeah.
It was quite scary. And this morning, when I looked out the window, it was a scene of carnage. It was only in terms of leaves that come down off of trees and twigs and stuff, but it was just everywhere.
But do you still have a roof?
As far as I'm aware, yeah. I haven't been in the garden to look, because our biggest
Or have I
concern,
actually? I mean,
well, yeah, you
it's
need,
pretty windy last night here as well.
yeah, you need to check. But as you know, we've had all sorts of problems here, having not been here for 2 years, and all sorts of problems with the house and jobs that I've had to do and fix things. But one of them was we did have water coming in through the roof in one of the bedrooms, so the
Yeah.
big test was to see if that was dry, because our friend and neighbour who's a roofer, Christoph, put up some new tiles on the roof for us. It's trouble with leaky roofs, it's actually finding where the water's coming in. You can spend a lifetime trying to do that, but we bought some new tiles and he put those up, and certainly last night it stayed dry. But sometimes when the wind blows from a different direction, it will find its way in. Anyway,
Yeah.
yeah, I think the roof is still there.
So in this section, we normally talk about the things we've been up to in Wiltshire over the last 2 weeks, but as you're in France, that's not much. There's a couple of things been going on, I guess, which are interesting. First of all, I just wanted to talk on something I'd kind of stumbled across doing some sort of reading and research. And it was something that's called the Pottern Midden.
Yeah,
Now,
I'd never heard
a
of it.
mid. No, nor had I. And I came across it and I was thinking, how on earth did I not know about that? Because it's been excavated. But a midden is, for those who don't know, who are listening, is basically a dump. It's a prehistoric dump. So you can imagine these prehistoric communities needed somewhere to put their rubbish. So they put it in a sort of in a place that was away from where the settlement was, but it would just be a big pile of rubbish, a bit like ancient landfill. But they've discovered in Wiltshire a couple of what I would call super-sized middens. One is in East Chisenbury, and I haven't looked into the East Chisenbury one yet. There is a Wessex archaeology report on it. But the one that got me, because it's not so far away from where I live, is this Potterne midden. And this midden that they'd discovered just outside Potterne is absolutely enormous. And just to put it in sort of a sense of scale, this midden, the rubbish, it's about 3.5 hectares in site and about 1.5 metres thick.
Wow.
So it's an enormous dump.
It is huge.
And there's no way that amount of rubbish could have been produced by a settlement that was in that area. So I think there's a working theory that that area was a location for some kind of a regular gathering or festival. And the midden is almost like the leftovers of the festival. So all the old animal bones and crap from the festival is just shoved in this midden. And it's built up over years. And there's all sorts of things there. I mean, they've excavated something like 1% of the midden in itself. And in that 1%, they discovered 130,000 bone fragments. So you can imagine if you extrapolate that out, you're talking about 13 million animal bones. So they're maybe doing some ritual sacrifice and putting the bones in the place. And you can imagine it's almost like the Iron Age version of Glastonbury, where they just chuck everything in a dump at the end of the year and come back the following year to make merry and have feasts and then dump all the crap again in the corner.
Are you sure it's not just an Iron Age version of the landfill at Chitton, when you get all these lorries rolling through my village to dump crap out there? I've now got this image in my mind of you looking into a midden. You're going to go and look into this landfill. So I might come and have a look at that as you do so.
Yeah, this Iron Age dump.
Yes.
But the reason it got my interest is because there's an archaeologist on Twitter who I follow called Adele Bricking, who's based in South Wales, and she's a sort of PhD researcher. And her PhD is on
rubbish.
Mortuary practices.
PhD in rubbish.
Mortuary practices in the Iron Age. So she's interested in the bones.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they uncovered a human bone in this midden. So she's been scratching her head saying, well, what on earth is a human bone doing in this sort of festival dump? So there's some sort of sinister thing going on there. Maybe someone got bumped off and they chopped him up and shoved him in the midden.
Is it only one human bone she's found, or they've found?
Well, that's another question. I'd have to go away and look at that.
Yeah.
Whether there's more.
Because I've just reading a book at the moment, just coming to the end of it. It's about, I can never remember the author's name. It's in the next room, Malachi, somebody he's from Shetland, and it's and as usual, I can't remember the title either. But it's about the 60th parallel, you know, the line of latitude, and he starts his journey around the world from Shetland, from Lerwick, south of Lerwick, from the Brock at Moosa, which is a very famous Brock. And he starts there because it's on the 60th parallel, and he sort of travels all the way around the world, and he's just getting towards the end of his journey, and he's in Scandinavia, and he was talking about this sort of sacrificial site, and it sounded similar, and I think it was in Sweden, and there were three sort of burial mounds at this site, but then a huge number of bones were found there. I think the name of the site was something. There's a university town just north of Stockholm, and it's called something like, I can't access my internet and talk to you at the same time, but Uppsala or something like that. And it's a very, very good university, and it's just outside
Uppsala.
There. Uppsala, that's it.
Yeah, I know. I've worked there before, strangely enough.
Oh, have you? You've been there? Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they've got apparently three burial mounds outside, and it can't be far because he walked from Uppsala to the burial mounds. And then there's these sort of pits, but in amongst all the sort of animal bones things, there's also human bones. And they reckon it was, well, they're pretty certain it was a site of human sacrifices as well as animals, and that they used to hang the people from the sacrifices, if that's the right word, but the people that they sacrificed, used to hang them from trees, either as an offering, I suppose, yeah. or as some sort of, and these are sort of pagan rituals. Anyway, used to hang these people in trees and then sling them in a pit. So, gosh, wouldn't it be interesting if we had that going on at Potton?
Well, just before we move on to another subject, but the last word I'm going to say on Potton is someone on Twitter has put this about Potton. It was a guy called Dominic Barker. He says, when he used to work at Wessex Archaeology, they were having a meeting about what to call the publication that they were producing about the Potton Midden. And someone suggested that they should call the publication Potton, a load of old shit.
That's brilliant. I'll go with that one.
Yeah.
Of course.
Oh, the glamour of archaeology.
Oh yeah. Well, of course, Potton is where that the bishop's palace, the Bishop of Salisbury's palace, and hunting grounds.
Yeah.
And yeah. You've got the sort of the enclosure there in the wood just outside, which we talked about in the spring because it was full of bluebells. And
yeah, the moated enclosure.
The moated enclosure, that's the word I'm looking for. And that's yeah. on the Folly Wood walk that we did.
Yes.
So that's, anybody's wondering where Potton is, that's where it is. It's on the A360 between, going between sort of Salisbury and Devizes.
Mm,
but whereabouts is the Midden then, in relation to the village?
Apparently, it's in the sort of north part of the village. It's on the outskirts of the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in a field. I mean, it's just, you go there now and you wouldn't see anything.
Yeah.
But it's on the cemetery and the field just next to that.
Mm.
But I'm just thinking, I mean, in the Iron Age, Potton was clearly the place to be for parties.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And feasts. It feels a bit random now because Potton's quite a sort of sleepy little village.
Yeah, apart from the, you have of course got the fire brigade headquarters there. One of our neighbours, she's just got a job working in the sort of the emergency call centre there. So, you know, the 999 calls. So she's a call handler. She works out of Potton.
Right in the middle of nowhere, that is. It's funny, I used to do some voluntary work for the fire brigade. So I used to travel around and see some of the different places, but the security on that place in Potton is quite tough. You have to get special permission to go in there or something.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Wow.
The other piece of news.
Yeah, the other piece of news was there was a bit of a kerfuffle over this, wasn't there?
There was.
The Fifield Down was is this word which I didn't even know existed. It was de-declared as a national nature reserve, and of course, you know, it's one of our favourite places. We've done did a Wiltshire Museum walk there. We've done a podcast there. We've been there quite a few times over the last year or so. So to read this, which just kind of came out of the news and came out of nowhere. And the news was broken, or it was announced on the gov.uk website, and it was just a very bland notice saying it's been de-declared from such and such a date.
Yeah.
That was it. No explanation.
But the thing is, I mean, this is one of the oldest national nature reserves. It's been in the National Nature Reserve since 1955.
Yeah.
And I think some of us are scratching our head thinking, well, how can you just unilaterally declare that it's been de-declared with no context or explanation?
So of course Natural England managed the reserve, and much of it is owned, and just to complete the story, the reason, so we a number of people got quite alarmed about this and were sort of looking into and asking questions about what happened and why, basically what happened was that it was de-declared at the landowner's request. So, you know, that rang even more alarm bells. Well, how can a landowner just say, right, this isn't going to be a nature reserve any longer? But I think I think because it caused such a reaction, from us and you know a lot of other people, and I know Wiltshire Museum were interested in it. And then I saw a couple of days ago on the Wiltshire Museum Facebook page, they'd shared a statement from the Marlborough Open something Facebook site, which gave a bit more information about it. And apparently the Natural England had a lease on this site for, was it 75 years or something? I'm doing all this from memory.
I think it was 99 years, actually.
99 years, that's right. But there was a break clause in the lease which allowed either side to sort of review, and the landowner sort of invoked the break, and as they're perfectly entitled to do. And then the statement said that it will continue to be a SSSI, which is great to hear. The landowner is committed to maintaining access rights and will continue to work with Natural England in terms of management of the reserve, which is fantastic. I mean, that's all great news. But it did lead us to question what's the point of a nature reserve then? If you can do all this stuff without it being a nature reserve, why have a nature reserve in the first place? And I don't know what the answer is to that.
Yeah, it's a very it does raise that question: why do this? You know, what is the reason behind it? And I guess unless we ask the landowner the question, we wouldn't know the answer. But to my mind, it's almost like if it's a national nature reserve, then Natural England have got the responsibility to manage the land. But if it's not a national nature reserve, then that management responsibility falls back to the landowner,
I guess.
So yeah, they have to maintain it.
Yeah.
But I guess they'll have less interference.
Yeah, I think, you know, as a landowner, I don't know, would you want somebody like Natural England poking their nose in left, right and centre? I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, there's quite a lot of restrictions, aren't there, and things? Because I know we've talked to David Carson over at Milk Hill, because Natural England have got the Pusey Downs National Nature Reserve on a sublease as well. And, you know, he's got a lot of restrictions about what he can do on the land that is part of the National Nature Reserve.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, he was complaining, wasn't he, over the summer that they weren't managing the ragwort.
That's right, yeah.
So,
But, I mean, you can understand why people get alarmed, you know. So, you know, they distill the announcement into a few sound bites, and the sound bites say, landowner, you know, asks for nature reserve to be de-declared. And people immediately think, well, you know, what's his motives? What's he going to do? Why is he must have a reason for doing that. And, you know, I'm sort of told time and time again that there's absolutely nothing going on here. There's nothing fishy about it at all. And, you know, there are no issues because of all the other controls that will still exist around his use of the land. So, you know, hopefully there's nothing to worry about.
Yeah. So maybe the communication could have been better.
Exactly. You know, why wasn't there an announcement to say, you know, because I think this break clause was invoked, you know, not a few weeks ago, but some years ago. So
2 years ago.
Yeah. So I think it's been, you know, this sort of hiatus period, this limbo for, you know, 2-3 years. And, you know, he's not marched in and done anything in that time. Why wasn't there an announcement from somebody somewhere saying this is what's going to happen? And, you know, just communicating to the, you know, thousands and thousands of people who, you know, go to Firefield Down, and, you know, it's a big space and it's not crowded by any stretch of the imagination, but an awful lot of people enjoy that landscape. Is it any wonder that people are going to be concerned?
Yeah, but I guess the positives are it's still got SSSI status, so it's got protection over the heritage aspects and the natural aspects.
Yeah.
It's still got the open access land, so that doesn't change. We've still got a right to roam over the areas that have that. And all the rights of way are still there. So that hasn't changed. So from our perspective, nothing should change. We just, as a community that use that space, I just think we just need to keep our eyes open and be the eyes and ears of Natural England. So if we see something going wrong, like someone moving sarsens that shouldn't be moved, you know, that we report it in the right way.
Yeah. And, you know,
I think that's all we can do.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Natural England will continue to have responsibility for enforcing adherence to the regulations around the SSSI, you know, and that's the case anywhere. You know, if somebody does something they shouldn't be doing in a SSSI, it's Natural England's responsibility to enforce it. And there's a whole department within Natural England that does that. And, you know, we have that in our area. And, you know, something we talked about before, is it Langford Wood? Is that? God, my memory today is terrible, worse than usual. Up at Groveley Wood, where you've got a reserve there.
Little Langford Down.
Little Langford Down, yeah, where the landowner has fenced off a chunk of that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know that is the responsibility of Natural England to, you know, talk to him about that, and I know they have. So, anyway, time will tell, and hopefully nothing to see here.
Indeed. So, shall we move on to this week's topic?
Yeah.
So this week we're going to the Great Ridge, the Great Ridge Wood. So do you want to say a few words about the Great Ridge and where you can find it, Paul?
Yeah. So basically we're going to talk through a walk that I did on the 6th of February 2020, which I wrote up as a blog, which is dated the 8th of February 2020 on the website. And in fact, you've just made a mistake there that I made as well when I first wrote the blog, because I called it The Great Ridge, and it's not The Great Ridge, it's just Great Ridge. So if you look at the map, so we always think of it as being, you know, to my mind, it was naturally The Great Ridge because it's, you know, it's on a ridge. But Great Ridge is just the name of the wood up there. As I say, this was a walk that I did last year, and a walk that I felt very guilty about it because I blagged the, as I called her at the time, the current Mrs. Timlett, I blagged her into doing this walk, not really realising how long it was. In fact, when we went up there, I thought we'd just go up for a stroll and have a wander around. It's a nice foggy day, so it might make some nice black and white photographs.
A stroll, famous last words.
Yes. Trouble is, she knows me too well and doesn't believe a word I say. So as I said in the blog, she said, "Well, I'll make some lunch," and I said, "No, we won't need lunch. We're just going for a short stroll. A coffee will be fine." And 8.5 miles later, I think making lunch was a good call. But I didn't have a walk in mind. In fact, I had no intention of writing a blog about it. I just took one camera, one lens, and you know, got some pictures of the mist, which cleared pretty quickly. So, you know, that interest had gone. And it was only when we were up there I thought, well, you know, let's see if I can piece together a walk. And I sort of looked at the map, which I had on my phone, and pieced together something which turned into a bit a bit more of an epic than I anticipated.
Yeah, but Great Ridge, the wood itself, I think it's also been called in the past Chicklade wood.
Yes, that's right. I think it was called Great Ridge Wood. So you've got Great Ridge and then Great Ridge Wood, yeah. And as you say, Chicklade wood.
Because it's just north of Chicklade, just north of the A303.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking on the map, you can see it's almost like it's separated from, but follows the same sort of direction as Groverley Wood.
Yeah.
And it's intersected by the A303, and a lot of the wood between the two woods has been, you know, cut down. But you can see that it must have been a continuation, because there's a Roman road that cuts right through Groverley and continues right through the middle of Great Ridge. And the thing about Great Ridge, it's not easy to get to. You know, you can't just roll up in a car and park in a car park, but in the wood.
No, that's right.
It's separated from most of the road routes in there, so you have to walk a fair distance to get into it.
Yeah, there's
which means it's a little bit more remote than a lot of other woodland.
And it's certainly quieter. I mean, it's a hell of a lot quieter than Groverley Wood. And so where I parked, and it's not the only parking space, but where I went to was, I went to Sherrington, which is on the along the Wyly Valley, but it's the sort of the little, yeah, the minor road that follows the Wyly Valley, not the A36. And at Sherrington, there's a sort of S bend that where it, the road crosses the just to the west of Stockton, where it crosses the railway, and you go over the railway bridge, and if you're heading west, immediately over the railway bridge, there's on the apex of the bend, on the outside of the bend, there's a track, or well, it's actually a metal road, and you sort of drive up there, and it's a single track road, so you know, if something coming the other way, you've got to shuffle past, but eventually the road runs out, and there's a space for probably no more than about 3 or 4 cars. And you can sort of park up there, and that's at basically you're up at Stockton Down by then. So you park up there, and then you walk up to Great Ridge from there, and it's not a long walk, but it's a sort of fairly steep hollow way, and it goes up Stony Hill. And there's kind of like a canopy of trees over it, and it's a nice spot. It is, you know, that in itself is just a nice walk, but eventually you reach the top, and you reach that Roman road that you mentioned. Now that Roman road must be the one that we talked about in the last podcast, the Knapp Down one. It's the same stretch of road that goes from Salisbury to Shaftesbury, or the stretch that in our region is Salisbury to Shaftesbury. I mean, the Roman road's goes much far beyond that, both directions. So I'm pretty. It's the same road, isn't it?
I'm not sure it is. I think this one is the one that goes towards, I think it peters out at Pertwood and heads over.
Oh,
to
is
the
that
Devils
one? Yeah.
It's the one that goes to the ford at Kingston.
Yes. You're right.
So they think that one probably was heading towards Bathway.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things, they're not quite sure, but I think there's a perception that there was a crossroads. That was a sort of a road for industry.
Yeah.
That would have met with the road coming up north from Poole all the way up to Bath.
Yes, that's right.
And would have been a crossroads at Kingston Deverell. But I'm not going to say much more than that, because it's speculation, and people like Mr. Dewey is very up on his roads and tells me off as making assertions which aren't backed up with facts.
Well, so he should get himself.
Can only speculate.
He should get himself on here and put us straight. We do need to get him back to talk about more of these extra tracks, because he knows what he's talking about instead of us making it up.
Yeah,
not that we would do that, of course.
But I can confirm though that Roman, because I did this walk. Well, it's funny, on the last podcast, you asked what I was going to do.
Yeah.
As a walk that weekend, and I said I'd do the Great Ridge, and I did do it.
Yeah.
So I did this a couple of weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
and that Roman road, I can confirm that it is very Roman. It's dead straight.
Yeah, yeah. As of course it is in Groveleywood.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've just sort of looking at the map now, and you're right. It's this is, I think, to the north of the road that heads through Groveleywood, the Roman road there. And of course, you know, there's more than one Roman road. They go off all over the place. In fact, I'm just, no, it's for another time. I'm going east now, looking at where that Roman road goes and where it is in relation to Groveley. But the other point to make about this, about Groveley Wood itself, is that it's owned by Fonthill Estates, isn't it?
You just said Groveley Wood. I think you meant Great Ridge.
No. I was looking at Groveley. I was looking at the road in Groveley Wood in relation to the one in Great Ridge. Oh, did I just say Groveley Wood was owned by Fonthill?
Yeah.
Okay, so beg your pardon. Yeah, so Great Ridge is owned by Fonthill Estates. And in years gone by, local people, particularly from Chicklade, had the rights to go up to the wood and take wood. They could cut trees down and take wood back down. So that was a right that was given to them by Fonthill Estates, I guess, going back, you know, 100 years or more.
And it was fun. It's funny because when I was up there, I was quite surprised to see it was owned by Fonthill Estate, because it's quite far north of Fonthill.
It is, yeah.
So I was amazed that the land ownership extended so far, because we've done Fonthill Estate on another podcast.
Yeah.
And part of that walk near the lake takes you through a woodland called Little Ridgewood.
That's right, yeah.
Which must be Great Ridge's younger brother.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, you know, I'm looking at now, I mean, Great Ridge is sort of due north of Fonthill Bishop, so it's, and sort of Chicklade is certainly something called Chicklade Bottom Farm is directly between the two. Chicklade itself is slightly off to the west. But in the blog I talked about the book, which I've mentioned a few times. I think it's a lovely book. It's by a guy called W.H. Hudson. It was written beginning of the 20th or end of the 19th century, if I remember rightly. It's called A Shepherd's Life. And it is about a Wiltshire shepherd. And in there, it refers to people going up to Great Ridge from Chicklade to collect wood. And of course, now it's very much you know, a commercial, you know, forestry operation up there. It's big business. There's a lot of logging goes on up there. You see big logging wagons, you know, big trailers sort of laden with trees, which are cut up there and taken down, and equally a lot of planting. So it's, you know, it's a commercial operation up there. But there's some great names as well. So when you come up sort of through that Holloway up Stony Hill, or the flanks of Stony Hill, and you reach the ridge and you sort of turn right and head west along the Roman Road. If you look on the map, just immediately to the north of the Roman Road, there's this thing called Snail Creep Hanging, which is... I was looking yesterday at the derivation of that name, and you know what on earth is Snail Creep Hanging? And apparently it was used in a Thomas Hardy novel under the Greenwood Tree, and he uses the name there. And they think that the name may date back to the Middle Ages, and it's nothing to do with snails, or it's, doesn't sort of refer to snails in the wood. It's a vernacular for a sort of, and I love this description that I read, for a general sense of snailiness. So I'm not sure what snailiness means, other than perhaps being very slow, or maybe slimy. I don't know.
Yeah,
but that apparently is where it comes from, and. And again, you sort of look at the map, and it's got this name just to the north of the road, Snail Creep Hanging. But where's it referring to? Is it something in the wood, or just to the north of that? There's a sort of almost a sort of re-entrant. There's sort of contours cut into the wood, and it's sort of open down. Is that Snail Creek Hangout? I don't know. I'm sure we'll ever know. But so you sort of head on past there. The other sort of feature that's caught my eye just to the south of the Roman Road is Grimm's Ditch, which runs parallel to the... So on the 1 to 25,000 map, you'll see Grimm's Ditch marked there. And again, yeah. I mean, we see Grimm's Ditch sort of crops up all over the place. And Grimm's Ditch isn't one ditch. It's a sort of... It's, as the name suggests, it's a earthwork above a ditch, a bank and ditch. And these are generally sort of Iron Age features, and they were built either as sort of a military barrier or to demarcate territory. But the name Grimm's Ditch came much later. And so, for example, there's a Grimm's Ditch marked over at Verndich Chase and Martin Down, and I don't think it's the same one. And there are Grimm's ditches all over the country. And there are, I think there were three theories as to what the grim bit means. And one of them, which I think I like to think is the more accurate one, is it's an Anglo-Saxon name for something which is mysterious in origin. So, the Anglo-Saxon people hundreds of years after the Iron Age may have looked at this and thought, what on earth is that? It's mysterious. We don't know what it is. Let's call it Grimm. Maybe that's where we get the meaning of the how we use the word Grimm now. I don't know. There were a couple of other explanations as well, but I like that one, so I'm keeping to that one. But also,
it is. I mean, I've seen Grimm's ditches all over the place.
Yeah, exactly.
They're everywhere.
Yeah, all over the country. I think I read there's Northamptonshire and down in the southeast. And it's not just one feature like a Watling Street or something like that stretches for miles and miles. These are different features.
It's just maybe it's just a generic term about these ditches.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
The Anglo-Saxons, they coined that term. And of course, as you're following this Roman road, and there are a number of, ultimately you're going to sort of strike north and come off the ridge, and there are a number of ways of doing this. But as I was following the Roman road, and the Roman road actually sort of deviates, it starts to branch away from the bridleway along the top there. I don't know if it's bridleway or a byway. Anyway, it sort of branches away, but There's a junction of tracks, and there's quite a big enclosure marked there, and that's at the western end of the Grimm's Ditch that is marked up there. So presumably, that Grimm's Ditch in Grovely Wood, it seems like a hell of a coincidence for it to stop right by this enclosure.
Yeah, it's funny because I had a walk down to that enclosure to have a good look at it.
Oh, did you? You got in there, did you?
Well, the funny thing was, I walked down the track to the south to go to the enclosure that's at the end of the Grimm's Ditch.
Yeah.
And there wasn't much to see, to be honest. It had been pretty flattened.
Yeah.
You could make out the shape, but it wasn't a very obvious feature anymore.
Yeah. And there's there's another enclosure a little bit further on, so on the walk, we go past something called Point Pond, which, having sort of blundered around in the woods there, seemed to be a little more than a puddle. And, of course, when I went in February, as I said in the blog, my wife and I were both wearing wellies at the time because we didn't anticipate doing a long walk. And it was just as well we did, because it gets really boggy around there. So this little pond was evident.
It was pretty boggy a couple of weeks ago around there. Actually, very wet.
Even then,
underfoot.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But just after that, there was another enclosure marked just by so you've got one side of to the north of that of the track that we were on, and it is barely a track. I mean, basically you just blundering through the forest. There's something called Scrubbed Oak, and then to the other side of the track there's another enclosure marked, And I try to find that. And again, the where it's been planted, where they planted sort of pine trees, it's so dense that you can't actually get into it. But somewhere in there is another enclosure, and it looks like a fair size on the map. But I did try to get into the woodland there, but as I say, it was so dense. I mean, you need a machete to get in there. And then there are other enclosures marked sort of south of that as well. So there's an awful lot of history. There's an awful lot of prehistory going along in this area, as in so many places in Wiltshire.
Yeah, and it's good. I mean, it's all marked on the map, but like you say, when you're there, it's pretty heavily forested, so it's hard to discern these things at ground level.
Yeah.
And also, one thing to say is that when walking through the wood, there are quite a lot of rights of way, but it is a working wood.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't recommend going off the beaten track, because there are lots of little tracks and tributaries that you could go down, but I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, there was a sign at the entrance before I went into the wood that pretty much said, please keep to the rights of way, because I can't remember the exact words, but it said that we fire guns up here.
Yeah,
so there's a shoot up there as well.
There is, and again, I mentioned that in the blog. This is a very active sporting estate, and the day we were there, I don't know if they were shooting deer, but there was a hunt up there. There was sort of a load of vans up there, and then we heard some shots, and we heard a sort of hunting horn, and I don't think they were shooting birds, but there are a lot of deer up there. Funny enough, I hope I'm not getting my woods mixed up here, but a friend of mine who's very, very good woodland photographer, and also a very, very highly skilled, he's bird watcher is the wrong term for it, but he's this guy who can sort of identify birds just from their song or the flight, and he goes up there quite a lot, because this is a great place for seeing goshawks and hearing goshawks. And I think you heard one, didn't you, when you went up the other
week?
Yeah,
I did. Yeah,
and it is a great place to hear goshawks. If you're really lucky, you'll see one, but they're quite secretive birds. Rich has seen them up there, but he bumped into and he did go off piste a little bit in his attempt to get a photograph of a goshawk, and he did bump into one of the, I think the mother of the somebody who sort of manages the estate, and she was up there, and she was pretty relaxed about people walking around up there, but the other people may not be. So I discretion being the better part of valor, I would stick to the rights of way. Having said that, route finding is not easy, and I was trying to follow this particular right of way, and my OS Maps app was sort of sending me off deep into the forest, where there was no track.
There was that same problem.
Yeah, so, it's interesting. So it's something's wrong. Either they've planted over the ancient right of way, or the OS Maps app is wrong. I don't know.
Yeah. So just to say, when I got to on the map, it says Scrubbed Oak.
Yeah.
And the path veers left there, the right of way. And I have to say, I could not find the right of way.
No.
It was totally overgrown. Whatever was going on there, it just wasn't there. So I just carried on north, up past Scrubbed Oak, until I hit the other track going to the left there.
Yeah, and that's I think that is the Wessex Ridgeway you were on there.
Yeah.
I did something slightly differently. So where as you say, you've got Scrubbed Oak, and you need to be, if you look on the blog, he may not be marked there, because I think I used the 1 to 50,000 map when I posted the route map on the blog. But on the 1 to 25,000 map, you've got Scrubbed Oak. Below that, you've got Point Pond, and that's where the path sort of goes due west, heads northwest for a short stretch, and then west again. And that's the turn that you were talking about, which basically doesn't exist. It's not there. But shortly after that, before you get to the Wessex Ridgeway, you can take a left there, which is a relatively narrow but very clear way between the trees. And basically, you just have to make your way the best you can, but you're still aiming for what is the Wessex Ridgeway. So yeah. I think what you did is probably the best way to do it. I wanted to try and find that enclosure, which is why I sort of went on some of the more minor ways through. But the Wessex Ridgeway is a broad, it's a bit like that, the Roman Road that we've been on before, you know, through the woods so far. You know, it's wide. I mean, they drive lorries up there, and that's probably the best way to go, really.
I have to say, it was quite a busy day when I did. I did it on a Friday, and when I say busy, I didn't encounter any walkers. There was just a lot of forestry going on.
Yeah, yeah.
So there were vehicles driving along the tracks, and they were doing some, you know, cutting. And there's a big shed along the Roman Road, a big sort of shed.
That's
with a
right.
massive, looks like a massive charcoal pit or something. And that was full of, there's about 20 foresters in there, sat around having their lunch.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's sort of before you reach Point Pond, and that's a big junction of tracks and things. Yeah, there was no, because another time I did this, I went with Stu and we did the walk, and we sat and had our lunch there, which I think is probably where you were intending to, weren't you? We stopped for a coffee there, that's right. So we sat in there and looking at that great sort of cauldron, and it does look like a charcoal burner, or it could just be a blooming big barbecue, I don't know, for the forest workers. Basically, you know, if you were following, if you'd gone on to the Wessex Ridgeway where you did, eventually you want to turn right and head north, and basically you want to strike for the direction of ultimately to Corton, around Corton Way, and a bridleway that takes you off the ridge. And again, it's very boggy there, so you head north, heading through the forests. Again, in February when we did it, you know, that was a real quagmire through there. And again, really grateful for having wellies on. But eventually we sort of emerged from the forest, so we're just west of what's marked as Pickett Grove on the map, and you emerge and you just get these most fabulous views looking way north, you know, right over to sort of Salisbury Plain, you know, across the Wylie Valley. And that's where,
I mean, that's it, because when you come out of the wood, you're still at quite an elevation.
Yeah, yeah.
So you get an enormous expansive view across the valleys.
Yeah.
All the way across to the other side of the Wylie.
And I, it's a great spot. I posted a couple of photographs from up there. In fact, you know, the lunch that I didn't think we needed, that's where my wife Julie said, right, it's, you know, I'm hungry, I'm going to have a sandwich. And that's what we just sat there, because the views. And it was quite a nice day when we went, despite the you know, being in February. And it's the views were just incredible. But you're going to sort of head north and northeast. Gradually sort of losing height. So this is a bridle way, and, you know, to the left you'll see signs of the pheasant shoot, which is a big operation up there, and there's some pheasant, pheasant pens just off to your left, which you can't quite see unless you go and look for them, but, you know, some big pheasant pens, lots of coverts for shooting. But you eventually come to an open access area on your left, which is called Well Bottom. And this is, you know, this is a place for our favourite features in the Wiltshire landscape. There are bottoms everywhere. And Steve,
bottoms galore.
Steve Dewey would say, bottoms a go-go. So you can sort of walk up to an open access area up Well Bottom. Doesn't go anywhere. You'd have to walk up it and come back down again. And I keep meaning to do that, because it is when the sun sort of, especially in, you know, winter time, when the sun never rises very high above the horizon, and the deep shadows, you know, nice crisp winter's day, it's just beautiful up there. And you head on down, and then there's another bottom to your left, a long bottom. Again, it's open access. You can walk up there. To your right, there's another one. Hasn't got a name, but there's some earthworks marked on there in just by Grenadier Wood. And all the time you're running, sort of you're walking along the edge of these open access areas. And it's quite a long way to get to that minor road that runs along Wylie Valley. I reckon it was a couple of miles, but it is it is beautiful, and it's well worth just taking your time along there and just taking that all in. But just before I got to the road that heads through the Wylie Valley. If you go all the way down to the road, you would turn right to go to Courton itself. But there's a footpath on your right just before you reach that. And I didn't want to walk along the road, so I took that right hand turn and headed to what's called Model Farm, which is on the road. And you reach the road at a sort of a corner or a bend, and this is where you meet the Wessex Ridgeway. And you're almost sort of like doubling back on yourself. So you're going, you've lost all that height, you've come down from Great Ridge, you've taken that right-hand turn, you reach the road, and you immediately turn right and head south again and climbing. And it's worth doing this because you climb up through, again, another holloway. But this is where you come to, on your left, you see the what's called Courton Longborough, which I, you know, It's not very big, but we included the clump of trees there in the our blog about clumps, didn't we? Because it's just like the almost a perfect clump. There's a Neolithic Longbarrow in the trees, and the trees are planted on the Longbarrow. And you look across it, and off to the north, you can see Heytesbury and Nook Camp in the distance. But you know, look, beautiful spot there, and you took some photographs there, and I've taken some photographs there. Did you find out anything about the Longbarrow?
Only that what had been written on Historic England, in that it was excavated by the usual suspects, Cunnington and Hoare, and apparently they did find skeletons in it.
Yes,
so.
Apparently, it was eight skeletons and two cremations in urns. I mean, with all the enclosures and, you know, there are hill forts around here. You know, there was clearly, you know, a reasonable number of people living in this area at the time.
Most definitely. I mean, the Longbarrow itself is quite a picturesque one. It's very photogenic.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, as I was walking up the hill there, you get some nice views across the Wylie Valley.
Mm-hmm.
And I could look across and see, you could see Nook Camp, and I got a very nice view of Dunscombe Bottom, which is where I go to count sheep and cows.
Yes, of course, yeah.
It's, I've never seen it from that angle before. It was really nice.
Yeah, and there is also, if you timed it right and you had enough time, there's a very nice pub in Courton, the Dove. So that's, I could recommend that for a visit. I didn't do it in February, but it suddenly dawned on me how far we had to walk in February. There wasn't much daylight. So.
Yeah.
So yeah. As you come up that sort of holloway and you've passed the Longbarrow, you do sort of reach a number of sort of junctions, but what you want to do is just keep heading southeast, and you're heading towards Courton Field Barn, which is a sort of collection of barns up there. And this is where the Wessex Ridgeway sort of heads south, you know, back up towards Great Ridge. But you want to sort of continue along the same direction. Heading southeast, I think from memory there's a bit of road. It's and we were again, wearing wellies, and despite the time of year, it was quite warm, and I think we were both starting to feel it on our feet there, that trudging along this road. And you're heading to, again, two curiously named places at the top of the hill. One's called, and I don't know how to pronounce this, North Super and South Super. Super spelled S-O-U-P-I-R, and they're either side of the track.
And this is where I got a bit off-piste, actually, because I was walking this route with my son, and we were just chatting, and we just blindly followed the track and followed the edge of North Super heading towards that Long Barrow.
Yes.
And as we got towards Long Barrow, we suddenly realised, actually, we'd gone the wrong way.
Yeah.
So we had to go back on ourselves, because you're actually heading for for a track that goes across the field. You're heading down towards Park Bottom.
Yes.
And it's not obvious whether the path splits from the road.
Yeah, so just to be clear there, it's Park Bottom that you're heading to, where when you went wrong, you could have carried on and you'd have come out at that railway, the road bridge over the railway, where you first head off to find your parking space. So you could have gone that way. And again, there are tumuli and the Long Barrow marked there, so that might be an interesting way to go. But yes, you're right. The walk, and it's just a walk that I put together. It's not right or wrong. You are heading down towards Park Bottom, and where it deviates from the road is actually, it just, as I think you just said, it just takes you through a field, and I think it does. It's either there or a bit further down. It says sort of beware of the bull, which
one is one of my favourite signs.
Yeah, and it is, whether it's bull or bullshit, I don't know, but the first time I did it, there was no bull. The second time I did it, there was indeed a bull. I think when Stu and I did the walk down near towards Park Bottom, there was a bull in the field there. But that's, again, you know, Park Bottom is open access. It's a very slim sort of finger of land that stretches sort of northwest to southeast. So you could sort of, you know, open access, you could wander around up there, but it looks barely more than, well, I don't know, maybe 100 metres wide, if that. But down at the bottom of the bottom, just before you get to the road that you drove along earlier on, there is a one of these, you see them a lot in our part of the world, a disused chalk pit, which I'm not sure how old that is. But basically, you just pass the chalk pit, you meet that little road, and then basically turn right and head on back to your car, which is only a few hundred metres away.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great walk. It's quite long, though.
Yeah, as I say, when I...
What, 10 miles?
No, well, I think, again, in the blog, you know, we both looked at our... You know, if you've got an iPhone, then everybody's got this health app which shows you how many steps you've done.
Yeah.
And to bear in mind, Julie and I did the walk together. Her app showed that she'd walked 10 miles. Mine showed that I'd walked 7 with a vastly different number of steps as well. So when I plotted it and posted the route map on the blog, it came in at about 8.5 miles.
So I when I did the walk, I tracked my GPS route. Mm-hmm. I had a Fitbit thing with a GPS tracker on.
Yeah.
And I know I did take a few detours here and there, but by the end of it, I'd done about 9.5 miles.
Yeah.
So I think if you follow the track, it's probably... Exactly, it's probably 8.5 miles. But as usual, I go off wandering in different directions and go explore places, long routes, so I add an extra mile.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Should we wrap up?
Yeah, let's do that.
So, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time, as normal, with next time around, we're actually going to do a special on Wiltshire Museum, where we will have David Dawson in the room, who's the director of the museum, and we're going to talk about all the interesting stuff we can find about the museum. Usual thanks,
Steve Dixon. More music from him. I think this was a new one. I couldn't find that we'd used it before. It's called I haven't written it down in my notes here. It's called, what is it, From the Edge of Grey to Green, if I remember rightly.
Yes.
And I picked that for no other reason than the fact that I could, you know, grey skies, the green of the wood moving from one to the other, you know, Great Ridge. I don't know what Steve had in his head when he composed and recorded it. I haven't asked him. But so that was the piece of music that we used. Lower Boots still going. Lower.co.uk, HW20 for a 20% discount at checkout there. Show notes, more links and stuff. Look at the website out our website, the Hidden Wiltshire website, for the shop and other interesting bits and pieces, and the Facebook pages, of course. Alrighty.
Okay. Well, we'll be back in 2 weeks. Until then, goodbye.